Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Well, welcome to Mind Shifter Radio. This is Michael Rice, your host, and my co-host Jeannie is not available by telephone. She's on the computer running the switchboard, and my other co-host, Dr. Tim, I think he dialed in his host. So, Dr. Tim, you're probably with us, aren't you?
I'm here.
Awesome.
I am here.
And have we got a good, clear, solid signal today, I hope?
Well, so far, I can hear you just fine.
Oh, good, good. Well, welcome. We're honored and blessed that everyone who joins us does do that and enters into this deep process, this challenging process to clean up generational patterns through first century Aramaic forgiveness and return to the root and the truth of our being, the root of who we are. And we live in a world where, you know, it's pretty much the inmates are running the asylum. If you look at the dialogue in the political realm with so-called leaders, you see the viciousness, you see the hostility, you see the rage, you see the lack of truth that is so rampant. And when you realize that's what's running our world, you realize that there's got to be something different. There's got to be a better way. And you know, if we could get our whole political and leadership process to the point where we were actually led by human beings, and our definition of a human being is simple, hold a newborn child. That awesome active presence of love, our offering is how we're designed to live. And if we're not living as that, if we're not being led by that, then life can get, of course, when life gets crazy, we all know whose fault it is, and it's somebody else's fault. Of course, it couldn't be mine. It's got to be yours. So we live in a world of accusation. And if you listen to the political dialogue right now between the administration in the U.S. and the administration in Russia, Putin's talking about how it's all the U.S. fault and they're behind it. And the U.S. is talking about how the Russians are the bad guys. And, you know, there's a great line in one of those songs, there ain't no good guys, there ain't no bad guys, there's only you and me, and we just disagree. And, of course, the bad guy is the guy who disagrees with me. And when we live in a world where we get two sides of a story, pointing the finger at the other and willing to be vicious and violent, then each one becomes justified in their story that the other is the problem and the other is truly the bad guy. After all, the Jew used a gun, he used a bomb. The person who makes that accusation doesn't stop to think that we used a bomb and we killed. And it's, and each side is fully justified. When does somebody break through to living as this awesome active presence of love we're designed to live as, living as true human beings? And that's what we're here to support. And when we play that game of it's somebody else's fault, it's interesting how self-centered we can become. And people actually think they're important enough for other people to sit around and figure out ways to offend them, to upset them, to ignore them, to make them feel bad, to, and on and on and on goes the list. And, you know, it's time for us to give up our ego trips And people don't sit around. Yeah, there's the occasional person who might sit and think, how can I create havoc in your life? That does happen occasionally. But by and large, don't think so important is to think that somebody else around tried to and upset you, how to diss you. Or that's just all ego stuff. That's all so ego-centered. And when we start to let go of that ego-centeredness and look at that word ego, it's awesome if you break it down into the initials, E-G-O. We are meant to live as the active presence of love in the world. And when you recognize that God is love, we're meant to live as the active presence of God in the world. That's the real meaning of prayer. And when we live in ego, it's edging God out. It's getting rid of the love and having us find a reason to believe that our upset is properly pointed at somebody else. Got nothing to do with me because look what they have done to me. It's like, get off the pity pot and give it up. Nobody's sitting around trying to figure out how to make you feel whatever it is you're feeling. And when you say, they make me feel that, then what you're telling us is you are denying and dissociating from the part of your mind that creates that particular quality of upset. And when you enter into the process of forgiveness, you will clearly find that it is your mind doing this to you. Stop it. Just stop doing this to yourself. It's like put an end to that ego-centered game of everybody else doing it to me and recognize the only upset you can possibly feel comes from inside of you. And this is such a tough lesson. For me personally, I've had to learn this lesson over and over and over and over again. And, you know, it starts to get old after a while, and you got to start to grow up after a while and take responsibility for what you're doing to yourself. And as we do that, then we can come together as true human beings and create a whole different game on the planet. And it's time for a different game, for sure. On a level of commitment to changing the game in your life, inside of your skin, and in the relationships you have in your world, we invite you to become committed enough. You know, so many people sit around saying, well, if only they changed, then the world would be different. And the denial is rampant. You know, there's a second aspect to denial that we don't refer to very often because it's so minuscule compared to the one of talking about somebody else as though they're the cause of what's going on inside of us. But the denial of pretending that everything's well when it isn't. I talked to lots of people. I was talking to someone this morning, and she's talking about how, oh, the world's more peaceful and the world's doing this and this doing that. And, you know, there are a lot of people doing a lot to change the game. But, folks, the game hasn't changed yet. The statistics say that the world is, and people might say, well, Michael, why are you focusing on that? Well, there's this beautiful line in one of the Beatitudes that says, you've got to look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society. We created a world that, according to objective measurements, the people who are tracking this on a global scale say that the world is 5% less peaceful than it was last year. Why do I focus on that? Because if we're contributing to that, then we're buying into the world's errors. And the only way to correct an error is to be willing to look into it and correct it. But if you're in denial about it, if you're pretending it, you're airy-fairy off in the sky somewhere, all is well when it's not, then you miss out on the opportunity to do what it takes to really, truly change the game. So that's what we're here to do, to look into and support a true change to one where we each have the opportunity to function as true, absolute, awesome love that we are, and to extend that presence of love through our physiology to each other. It's not a matter of loving another in the Greek sense of the word. And when I say that, I'm not referring to sexuality. What I'm referring to is that the culture has taught you to say, I love you. And the truth is, you are love. You don't do love. You can't love somebody. You can be love in somebody's presence. And if somebody changes the meanings of the word so that we don't understand, then we can't do what it takes, or we can't at least communicate doing what it takes to produce a different game. So in truth, you know, Jeannie and I still say to each other, I love you, but we know that underneath that, it's not the loving, that it is the presence of love that we choose to be with and for each other. And so that oftentimes translates into I cherish you, to shift the language. But accurate language is important. And so in reality, what we're really talking about is I choose to be love in your presence. And if you trigger something that's less than love in me, then I will thank you and I will forgive. That is, I will go inside myself and remove that which is less than love. So there's our starting point. We're delighted you're here. Dr. Tim, anything to share with us? Anything on your mind today?
Well, I think the theme lately has been people using drugs to avoid inner pain. And, you know, it kind of ties in with what you were talking about blaming everybody else for what goes on inside of me. Well, I think it was M. Scott Peck who wrote a book called The People of the Lie. And he has a theory in there about how normal everyday people do evil. And his theory is that the only way that can happen is that people get so caught up in trying to avoid their own internal pain that they'll do anything to escape it, and in the process they end up inadvertently doing evil to other people. It's like the people at a soccer match or a concert where a riot breaks out and they don't want to get hurt, so they run for the exits. Well, they're not running to the exit because they want to hurt somebody else. They're running for the exit because they want to avoid getting hurt themselves. And in the process, if they trample other people and other people get hurt or killed, it's inadvertent, but it still happens. And most of the evil that I see in the world around me and my patients really fits this quite nicely. People doing things to avoid or escape from their own internal pain, and as a consequence, they end up verbally attacking or harassing somebody else or accidentally not showing up the way they had promised they would. And so that this ripple effect happens of these negative behaviors towards others and inflicting of pain. And lately, in dealing with people, there are quite a few of us who are avoiding our internal pain and our internal work by escaping into fantasy about relationships or fantasy about sex or actual sex or the drugs and alcohol, of course, is a pretty obvious one. But what a lot of people don't recognize is the fantasy about the relationship and the drive to connect physically and sexually that's really driven by avoidance of internal pain. And it's quite a theme lately that's not very easy to break. It's been so thoroughly conditioned into us, and so many of us are trained so thoroughly into looking outside of us for a source of comfort, a source of feeling loved, a source of feeling connected, a source of feeling satisfied, that we're... And it's the flip side of the coin of thinking that somebody else caused my pain to think that somebody else can cause me to be happy or feel fulfilled. And so that's been the theme recently, and trying to get people to understand that at deeper and deeper levels is my work lately.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. If you go back 2,000 years ago, it wasn't just your work. It was a very common happening 2,000 years ago. And, you know, when you speak of the people of the lie, you're speaking of people who live out of carbon-based memory, out of the hurts and the pains and the energies of the past. And including that, if you go back 2,000 years ago, you hear Yeshua talking to some of the religious leaders of the day, and he says, you're functioning out of your father, the liar. they were his words. You know, the liar is the father of most people's behavior, is that which drives most people's behavior, and most of it's driven by hostility and fear, which themselves are drugs, which are ways of trying to avoid what's going on under the surface. So Yeshua was trying to resolve this dilemma 2,000 years ago, and I know that I've been working to develop a language and a way of speaking that supports people in moving past that, and then in developing the worksheets that we develop to give people a reliable path for coming out of state of being run by the liar, being run by the falsity of memory, and getting into the actual presence of human life. And in essence, what Yeshua is saying is, I do what my father tells me, and my father is love. I'm in relationship with that active presence of love, and that's what I do, and you have a different father. And he wasn't talking about an earthly father. He was talking about that which sources behavior. And in sourcing behavior based in hostility or fear, basically the awareness of the human sensibilities. You know, we've been talking about those the last few days. Another one of them is kindness. And that person who's racing toward the exit in order to try to save themselves and trample someone else to death has lost touch with their human sensibility. So their father is not love. Their father is not the creator. Their father is the past stored in the mind based in fear. And, of course, when you give people the tool, the pathway into removing that fear, the whole game changes. And it's so awesome to watch that happen, isn't it?
It is indeed. And I as you were talking, I thought about the line from Way of Mastery where it says, "You are like one who's been given the most precious jewel in the world. And knowing its value and being afraid that you would lose it, you hid it in one of your pockets. And years later, when you went looking for it, you couldn't find it. And now you're out rummaging through the pockets of everyone around you looking for this gem. And it's in your pocket. It's your true essence." And boy, we really have a culture. We really have a world that's done a lot to train people to the opposite effect of that, that we are not the gem, that we aren't good enough, that we are damaged and broken. And it's a real joy to be around when people wake up to the truth of the fact that they're loved, loving, and lovable forever, that they've never done anything wrong, and they have never mm-hmm. been in need of being forgiven, and that their true purpose in life is to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful in every moment of interaction with themselves and others.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about that jewel, I remember when we were in Southern California communicating with an Aramaic community about the word rachma, which is the word that Yeshua used when he described the first law, and that word rachma is a filter of frontal lobes of the brain we had discovered through many years of work and understanding. And then in speaking to this community, the Aramaic-speaking peoples explained that the meaning of the word had been lost, that they didn't really know what it was, but the tradition said that it was the most precious jewel that we could have. And then, as you mentioned, the Way of Mastery, we've had several discussions around the Beatitudes and the understanding of the Aramaic Beatitudes, and that directive that takes us into each of the Beatitudes, which each of them are just a how-to access a level of mind that's been hidden. That word tuvehun, that's been translated many times as blessed are they, actually speaks about uncovering a gift that the Creator gave you, uncovering literally a guidance system. And I think this would fit very well in that definition of a jewel, uncovering the guidance system that infallibly leads to happiness and well-being. And we layer it over with all the denial and all the dissociation and all the pain of the generations. And rare is the person, although they seem to be getting more common, that really is willing to do the actual work of going into, if I'm in pain, if I'm in disturbance, if I'm in upset, I have a piece of work to do. So I think I'll do my piece of work rather than talk about, blame, be angry with, or try to intimidate somebody else into behaving in a way that I don't have to look at my stuff. And, of course, if you're capable of upset, there's sort of a rule there. If you're capable of upset, of course, that means that you've still got your stuff. And, of course, we all do. I don't know anybody that's arrived, including you and me, Tim. Jeannie tells me that she has, but sometimes I'm even given to doubt on that one. But, you know, each of us is just doing our work and moving forward. And as we create a real community based in presence of love, which is what we're working to do with this radio show, to bring a global community together of people who are willing to support each other and hold fast to that state of love that dissolves everything less than love. You know, I had forgotten when John Ray was on the show last week and he shared with us the listening to the DVD, or it might have been the CD of Empowered to Heal. And I had kept saying, love heals, love heals, love heals. And that's something, you know, I haven't listened to that set of DVDs or CDs in several years. And so I had forgotten that that was a focal point in there. But to recognize that it is the active presence of love that dissolves the insanity. It is not beating up on somebody else, controlling someone else, none of the other games that the world teaches us. It is that active presence of love that comes forward when we choose to function as true human beings. And, you know, when we can't function as human beings, there's the next layer of our work. You know, that's kind of, as I've said before, the good news and the bad news. It always comes back to me. Oh, I'm in upset. I have work to do. Oh, they did this and I went into rage. I have work to do. Oh, they did this and I went into frustration. I have work to do. They did that and I went into sadness. I have work to do. It always comes back to me. If my energy is reflecting something that's less than this awesome, sweet, active presence of love, then that's my next piece of work. And life is designed to show us what our work is, and it's so cool. And we have a caller, Jeannie tells me, area code 417-766. You are on the air. 417-766, give us a name. Where are you calling from? Are you with us? 417-766. You are on the air.
Thank you.
All right, maybe you've gone away from the phone. We'll leave the phone line open. So, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, good. Say hello. How do you be?
I'm good. This is Julie.
Awesome. How are you, young lady? Yes.
I'm fine.
How are you?
The reason for my call is I was reading our electric newsletter. And they had a Second Chance Singers in it. This is the article. And it's inmates giving testimony and singing in a community. And this is a prison from Troy in Missouri. And I was just wondering if it's possible that I could read a little bit from this.
Oh, please do. Share it with us. That's awesome.
Okay, so the you know, when they go out in the community to sing, they actually are in shackles, and they are wearing their inmate clothing, which is either black and white stripes or the orange. So it says Captain David Curtis,
right,
the jail administrator, spearheaded the organization of the choir, which has its roots in a garden just outside the jail. And I remember you talking about, you know, starting a garden in the jail where Rex is.
Yes.
Last spring, the sheriff got the idea of putting a garden in that the inmates would care for. So I got a few guys who I felt could be trusted and wouldn't have to worry about as much to start tilling and planting, said David, who has been in the jail since January 2013. I started noticing that they were enjoying it, and the word spread in the jail. Next thing you know, the behavior in the entire jail kind of changed because everyone wanted in. They realized it was about behavior, trust, and your own self-respect. Along with the improved conduct, David saw a sharp decrease in the number of fights in the jail, he took the idea of the garden and started using well-behaved inmates to wash and wax cars, as well as clean the headlights of squad cars for better visibility at night. A jail employee, half-joking, told David, "With all the stuff you're having us do, next thing you know, you'll be wanting us to have a choir." He didn't take it as a joke, and that night he started planning the Second Chance Choir.
Ah.
Can I continue on?
Wow. Please, that's awesome.
Okay, this is the songs they sang. Some of the songs they sang were How Great Thou Art, Amazing Grace, Hurt by Johnny Cash, and Needle in the and the Damage Done by Neil Young. One of the inmates said, after receiving a standing ovation from the audience in St. Charles, which they practiced until 12 o'clock that night, his thought was, people judge books by their cover. We accept that, but we enjoy the challenge of maybe changing their minds by hearing us sing and giving our testimony, says Scott, who is hoping to be a free man in the summer. We haven't had a performance yet where people didn't break down in tears. This choir has meant a lot to these guys. Now, the man David Curtis, who's running this, he seems very sensitive.
Right.
So he said, we want to use these guys to help the community any way we can. These guys in our group are skilled, David says. We have card-carrying union members, plumbers, carpenters. We're unique with what we try and to do for the community. I've looked all over and can't find anything like it. David also is hoping the choir will help its members stay out of jail after they are released. We've had more than 20 men in this choir, and not one of them who has left has reoffended. None of them, said David, knocking on wood with his knuckles. These guys have all been turned around. These guys have all been burned before in one way or another. Someone has to have a real belief in them. While having inmates tend a garden outside or having a traveling choir may not work for every jail in every area, David says as long as it keeps working for his inmates and there is a demand for it, he'll continue to run the program. Think about it. We have been incarcerating people in this country for more than 200 years. Has it really worked, he says? Obviously, you can't save everyone, but, man, you can try. That's it.
How cool is that? Well, we're going to have to get that article to the prison in Ionia. I'll make sure that we get that. I have the email address of the warden. I'll make sure the warden gets it, and maybe that'll help to be the start of something different. That would be awesome. You know, that would be very cool.
It's really
thank you for sharing that. That's awesome.
You are welcome. There's some nice pictures of the inmates, and you can see when Scott is speaking. Can tell that he's come from his heart. And there was another part of this article where one fellow is already out, but he comes and joins the choir because they said it was just such a powerful opportunity for him.
Human life shows up, another way of doing that. Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to connect with those folks with that sort of attitude and input, and to then hand them the tool of forgiveness to take it to the next level. That would be pretty cool. I don't know where Troy, Missouri is, but maybe we'll have to see if we can get something happening there.
Yeah, there's a map, and we're in the southwest corner. Troy is in about the middle of the state on the east of Missouri. And, you know, they arrive in, like I said, when they're going to go sing, they're arriving in their shackles and they're arriving, you know, in their garb. But, you know, like I said, there's not a dry eye when they're done singing. But I thought it was really pretty amazing.
Yeah, just the simple recognition that we're all the same.
Right. And that they started out with, you know, the garden. And, So, you know, cool. I think, you know, this might be an opportunity. You know, who knows? They're not that far from us. Maybe you might want to, you know, consider something about having them down for food, fun, and forgiveness.
Cool. Yes.
All right.
Good idea. Good idea. Well, we'll follow up. I'll Google that and see if I can find that online. And perhaps everybody who's listening to the show could Google the Second Chance Choir in Troy, Missouri. Make a copy of that article and take it to your local jail. It's going to take action. You know, if we're going to move this number of the world being 5% less peaceful, we need everybody who understands that a difference needs to be made to go about making a difference. So this would be another way that each and every one of us can do that is take it to your local jail. Take it to your local prison. Take it to your local congressman. You know, get your congressman or your local state legislators to start passing laws that say we are doing something different than punishment. You know, that old penal system, that old guilt game, and punishment doesn't work. It doesn't produce the results of healing. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. There is a contact person, which is a Captain Davis Curtis, and it's Lincoln County Jail. So, Captain Davis Curtis, Lincoln County Jail, Second Chance Choir, and I can give you the phone number if you'd like it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, the phone number is 314-238-6984.
84, Lincoln County. Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome.
I think my
cat
wants
to. Well, anything else on your mind today, Julie?
No, when I was reading this, I was just totally thinking this is right in line with what Rex is doing. And I think that for this person to pick up on the vibration of planting a garden, you know, and really supporting these people, you know, it's just, I just think it's fabulous. So I had to share it.
Cool. All right, young lady, we appreciate you.
You are welcome, and we appreciate you, too, and have a blessed day.
All right. Thank you, Julie. And we've got 417255 on the
phone. Right, and I also have a voice now, but I will turn on 255, and then we head out.
Hello, this is Magda. I'm hearing a lot of background. Okay, now it's quiet. Hi, Magda from Missouri. Hello.
Hey there, young lady.
Hi.
I got you. You're loud and clear.
Okay, good. That was an awesome piece of information. Thank you, Julie, for sharing that. I just want to take a minute before you go on to other callers and let you know that Judy Thielen, who's staying at Heartland and taking care of things there, is having some medical stuff done today and tomorrow. And I wanted to just ask everyone who knows her or doesn't know her to hold her in love and light and see her in completeness and whatever health she's supposed to be experiencing.
Absolutely.
That's it. That's all I wanted to add today.
Well, you've got that. I talked with her yesterday about that, and that we'd be holding the space as she goes in for that procedure today. Relatively modern stuff. There's always that presence of love that takes everything to the next level and helps the physician's hands to be guided and the machines that are being used to perform perfectly and produce the absolute highest and best results.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, I wasn't aware that you knew about it, so I wanted to just touch in and say a shout-out to everyone else who met her this summer or who knew her from other past times as well. Okay, so I'll let you go on to other callers and tell you that I appreciate both of you, all of you, and love your work and love you both. So I'll say bye-bye.
All right, awesome. Okay, bless you. Take care. Jeannie, I heard you came in there for a minute. I assume that you're on Skype. And so do we have any other callers on the line? Hello, Jeannie. Are you with us? Well, if we have any other callers, I don't have their numbers. So if you called in and Jeannie has clicked the mic button for you, say hello. Give us a name and where are you calling from? And I'll assume that the silence means that we don't have anybody waiting in line at the moment.
Actually,
so we'll move forward with the process. Oh,
Michael,
ahead,
can you
Jim.
Hear me? Can you hear me, Michael?
I can.
Awesome.
I can hear you loud and clear.
It's Rex.
Rex.
Yes.
Hey,
and I didn't. Hi there. I didn't hear Jeannie click me on off mute, so I didn't. That's why I didn't respond right away. But yes, I was calling for a couple
okay.
reasons.
You're here.
Awesome. I have been busy with clients. I wasn't able to be on the
Did
program yesterday.
Did you hear what
yesterday.
Julie just read?
Awesome. That's what I wanted to respond to. It's
did you hear
so
what
exciting.
Julie just read?
Yes, I did.
I think it would be so cool to get Aonia involved in that.
Anything that will add to what we're doing is just a great idea, and I've been really contemplating this process of true rehabilitation or true, what I see it as being is true remembering, and it's the thing that they
right.
quite often
yes.
say they're doing in prison, but they don't. You know, it's just not taught, and I think people are waking up to the fact that the system they're doing isn't working, and they need alternatives. So I'm very excited about that, and I'll hand deliver it. I see Skipper almost every time, and I'll just say, you know, this is another
awesome.
Avenue. So I would love to do that, and I'll as a matter of fact, I would be a good idea if I wrote that down because I've got a lot on my plate right now. If I don't write it down, I sometimes forget. What was the?
Okay. And if you didn't get the phone number and the information, I'll email it to you. And next, my thought is that maybe, you know, with the fact in the nutrition, and they're basically getting nutrition-free food. Maybe this could go hand in hand. Maybe some of the laws of living inmates, with their new skills, could volunteer to start the garden and, you know, make a commitment to really being in integrity with the whole process and making that part of the change. And then they'd have the vegetables that they grow to eat, so they'd have decent food. I could see them in a greenhouse so they'd be able to grow year-round. That would be awesome. And that would certainly open a space for all of these inmates to go, God, I'm in here for life. I might as well go out and get in the garden. I might as well eat some decent food. I can just see it, you know, helping to create a crescendo of critical mass with everything that you're doing there in the jail, the prison.
Well, it's exciting, and I am so appreciative. I just, when Julie was sharing that, I just smiled, big smile on my face, saying, gosh, you know, anything that we can do individually and expressing it collectively is going to help. And this is a really big piece because I think, and I take ownership. I have forgotten them up until May, you know, and when we got exposed to them directly, or when I had a relative that went into prison. And so that's when I really started becoming aware of it. And I think society as a whole has forgotten them. And then we expect them to be rehabilitated, and the actual people that are, quote, rehabilitating them are doing it by which, from the same perspective that they put them in there with in the first place or for, and it was through hostility and fear. And it cannot produce any different results. And that's why we keep getting this recidivism. And then when you and Dan McDougall went into the prisons and started teaching truth principles and had such a tremendous result because it was so contrary to what, you know, they perceived was the way to do it, and it affected the bottom line, it just stopped. But, you know, the time was, it hadn't come quite yet, maybe, in consciousness as a collective. We weren't ready for that shift, and maybe we're more willing to look at those deeper fear-based realities inside us. And so now more of us are opening up to being in the prison system to look at it and share ideas. And I don't know how much Michelle touched in yesterday with the program because I was working with clients and I wasn't able to be. On Wednesday we usually touch in. Did she share about what happened in the prison on Tuesday?
No, we didn't get into that, so please do.
Well, if she's on the program, it'd be awesome if she could cue in. Jeannie, I don't know what's happening with her voice, but we can't hear Jeannie, but if she can, and Michelle, if you're on it, I'd love to have you share as well, because it's, I mean, we had, we're moving along really slow in the actual numbers. Like, we just finished the fourth lesson, and but what we're having happen is amazing. I mean, we're having inmates just step up, and they're getting so comfortable that I can just look at them and say, gosh, it seems like you have a goal running there, and it looks like you have this that you want. Are you willing to cancel that? And the one inmate that happened with two or three different inmates in the first group and the second group, I think we had probably four or five that did that. A lot of what we ended up doing, Michael, was supporting and processing, which is the definition of processing, holding the space of love when something unlike love surfaces. And we were doing just that with these inmates. And just, I mean, one guy, he's a tough guy. You know, he's a tough guy. I mean, and he just broke down, and his tears were coming out of his face. And he couldn't even, I was guiding him in a short version because he was in a processing rather than going through all the steps. We were going through a short version because it's not the focus of the lesson we were on necessarily, but it came up. And I said, we have a goal. And
right.
I said, you're willing to cancel it. He canceled it. And I said, okay, now invite Luca. He couldn't even remember when I would say, now invite the Holy Spirit or Luca. He would forget what to say as soon as he said invite. And then he would go, what was the next word? And it was just so much apparent unconsciousness was surfacing from him inside his mind-body system to heal out of his content that he would just go completely unaware. I mean, he couldn't even remember the words I was saying one word after. So I had to stop and say, he'd say, and I'd say, cancel my goal. And he'd say, cancel my goal. And then I'd have to repeat, you know, I was doing that, not have to, but I was doing that with him. And so I was watching that. And it was such a good example of how difficult it is, or how difficult it can be, to navigate through the depths of our carbon-based memory when those issues surface. And I'm just reminded over and over again to just, and that's just so powerful, Mike. And if you have any thoughts on that, I know you do, but it's just amazing to watch it. I was going to pause there because I'm on a roll, so I was just going to say if you had anything you wanted to interject, by all means.
Yeah, I'm right with you, Rex. When people start to access those deeper layers, especially if they've ever done drugs or alcohol, or there's genetic drugs, I was working with someone the other day and on the phone, and they were moving into just like they were in a drunk state. And slurred speech, the whole thing. And they had never had a drop of alcohol in their lives, but had a grandmother that was an alcoholic.
Mm.
And you process through those things when you get to opening up the genetics. I remember, and maybe Terry, if Terry's listening, maybe he'll tap into, because it was just so hilarious. We were doing Laws of Living. This goes back about probably 10 years ago, and Terry Bowling was there. I'm sure if he's not on the phone, he'll be happy to share the story. But he was processing some stuff, and we were getting to the point of the worksheet of talking about RACMA. And so I said, well, now there's a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain. Now, we've only said this maybe 20 times in the previous 6 or 7 days. And, you know, it's been there. And it was just – it was so funny because he's right on the edge of it, and he just couldn't get the word. So – I ran outside. This was at the Heart Center. I ran outside, and I picked up a big rock and walked in and handed it to him. He goes, oh, RACMA! It was just, you know, hilarious. But, yeah, we all get stuck. I can remember one time when I had about 200 people in a workshop in Miami, and I lived in Fort Lauderdale. And the next morning, it was just, like, such high energy. I went to major healing crisis, major cleanse. The next morning, I'm driving up I-95 to go home, and I could remember. I lived 4 turns off the interstate for 5 years at this point. I couldn't remember. My brain was so foggy from the detox, I couldn't remember what exit to get off the interstate. That's just part of the process. And certainly when we've got the help from our friends, it does make a difference, doesn't it?
Huge difference. And it's such a strong, important reminder to do the work daily while we're in a relative state of awareness, because when we tap into those deeper levels, if we haven't built the brain cells, if we haven't repeated the process enough in our carbon-based memory, it's more difficult to hold the space of love. And the more repetition I've put in on it, the more material is going to come up with my unconscious carbon-based memory stuff. What's going to be encoded into it as well is, hey, remember to breathe. Hey, we got to do a worksheet. Hey, we need to do forgiveness. And it's just using the mind from a proper perspective. Rather than using it for darkness, we're using it as it's designed to do and be for light and to support us being in the light. So just to reiterate how important it is to do the work
great
daily.
Great servant.
Yep. Go ahead.
I'm with you. And, the mind is an awesome servant, but it's a hellish master. And that's where
I
talked about the master bound by the servants in his own household, that we need to restore ourselves to being the manager of our own minds rather than the content of our minds managing our lives. It's a big reversal.
Absolutely. Another example that happened Tuesday was we were working with an inmate that has been there almost every single session but didn't do very many of the worksheets as far as the forgiveness process in his book. But he'd been there every day. I don't think he's missed any classes. He's been there almost every time. It's through the fourth level. And he was sharing. I had said something about, they were reducing copies and not letting us make copies anymore, so that's why I don't have copies today. I'll bring in from now on, we'll have copies for you, because now we know we can't get them anymore through the prison. And he said, "Who told you that?" And you could see it was pretty evident in his tone. It was a trigger for him. And I said, "Well, that's not real
disappeared,
important."
Disappeared,
right? Oh, I disappeared? Am I there now?
Yeah, it may be the signal on my end.
It was your end, Michael.
But
we heard
Rex. Say it once again.
He actually...
Say it once again so I can keep up with you.
You bet. One of the inmates was triggered because I was told we can't get copies anymore from the prisoner.
Right.
And so he was discussing that. He brought it up. Well, Michelle noticed right away, and she stepped up and she said, "Well, it appears, Mr. So-and-so, you have some hostility coming up." And the resistance was evident. And he said, "No, I don't." And it was like there wasn't anywhere to go because it butted up against his resistance. And so I just listened, and Michelle tried to soften it a little bit, and they talked a little bit. And then he went back to his projection, his images that he'd created in his mind, projecting on the people in authority. And I said, "I had a different experience. Could I share it?" And he said, "Sure." I said, I know that, Michelle, you used the word hostility, but my experience was that you felt frustrated." And he looked and he goes, "Well, I can accept that." And all it was is that he could say, "I can feel frustrated," but he wasn't willing to acknowledge that it was coming from pure rage, or hostility. Which I think Michelle was right, And so it was, and what he did from that, I said, "Well, then, would you be willing to cancel your goal? It sounds like you have a goal running." And he says, "Yeah." And I said, he started telling his story and said, "Well, yeah, but this is important." I said, "Oh, hold on. If you have a goal and you're frustrated, is the goal set based in love or is it set based in some form of fear or hostility?" Well, fear, hostility. I says, "And what's going to be the result of the goal?" And he goes, "Well, it's going to be negative or destructive." And I says, "Well, then is that what you want?" And he goes, "No." I said, "Would you be willing to cancel?" And he goes, "Well, sure." And he did. And Michael, I saw this shift, and I have a thing that I kind of play with, but I could see from his body language and his face contortions and the way he looked, and what I experienced with him was this release, a big release. And so I just said it to him. I says, wow, whatever just happened right now, did you notice that? And he said, yes, and he was smiling. And I said, and now regarding the situation with the copies, how do you feel? And he went, fine. And he chuckled. And I said, and you just did the forgiveness process. That's how easy it is. Do you guys get the, and it was so powerful because there isn't anything better than tangible, practical examples. And then one last piece, Michael, when Michelle was interacting, and I don't remember if it was in that moment, but I think it was related to that, she opened up a piece in herself and started sharing and elicited guidance from me to support her by using the forgiveness process and canceling a goal, and she did it in tears and showed vulnerability and openness. And they were riveted. The inmates were riveted to being there, able to support her in her healing process. And I hands off and hats off and total applaud to Michelle for being willing to do that in that kind of environment and feeling safe enough in herself and trusting all of us enough to do that. And so that was in conjunction with these other guys showing their process. So, you know, the progress is just immense, and I just, there's just the sense of that we're all getting it on really deep levels. And what we've done is we've kind of, in our minds, some of us, not everyone, but many of us have just made it something that is, you know, if you're a prisoner and you've created a horrible act, then you can't be an expression of love. But these guys are exampling it. I mean, I asked for them to send a little prayer to a friend, and I saw a handful of them pulling out their pads and writing down the name that I gave them. I mean, right there in the moment, and they're going to pray for that person. I mean, that is just cool, Michael. I mean, that along with what Julie's sharing with the gardens, I think we're really, and then Mitzi introducing her YouTube piece was just, I'm just moved by that experience. It just resonates so much love and excitement and also some sadness in me around it, but not because of it, but that's just because of what we have as a potential and what we haven't experienced quite yet, or I haven't, I'll own that. And I'm moving into more experience of it. But all these, go ahead.
Just the word that comes up as you express that, two things come up. One for me is it's just delicious. Yes. That's the word that comes. And think about in accolades to Michelle for doing that. Think about those men the next time they're in conflict with their spouses, the women that they've been taught all kinds of negative and destructive and nasty thoughts about. Think about how they'll be able to hold their wives, especially their daughters, their mothers, and hold them in their minds. I mean, that's just so monumental to do that. It's brings me to tears.
Yes. Yes. And I, along with that, Michael, is just the, I'm observing my own growth at leaps and bounds. I'm observing the inmates' growth leaps and bounds. I'm seeing a change in the guards that are being exposed to the work. I'm seeing guards. One guard just came in and sits right there, and he's just listening to a large part of the lectures and sharing. And I'm seeing Michelle grow so much. She is really going after and revealing these darker parts of her history and her past and her carbon-based memory and embracing it with love. So my hands off and applaud to Michelle as a person that's really representing the principles and living according to that. So, and I'm touched in my heart by all of us that are doing the level of work that we're doing, but it's beautiful to see her doing it as well, and all of us.
Yes.
So hi there.
So cool.
Hi.
There
I'm
she is.
To Ann Arbor, and I'm smiling, and I appreciate the accolades.
It was, Michael, the guy wanted to know whether Rex took me out for Subway the week before, and he was trying to avoid the difficult subject we were talking about. And when I watched him allow the coaching and pull back into his feeling, and his face changed immediately, and the tears started streaming, and he said he had all the pain, it resonated so much, and I was bawling openly, but breathing the whole time. And so I did recognize I was modeling the healing, and then and Rex, after he finished with him, he turned it on me, and it was wonderful. And like Dr. Tim said this yesterday, you know, everybody says, oh, it's so wonderful you're volunteering and all these nice things, but I'm selfishly doing it because I recognize that when I'm helping them to heal, I'm healing those parts in me too. And it was a great day Tuesday. And all the way until 10 o'clock at night, I was still bringing Rockman.
Cool.
Rex, tell them about Mr. Chain.
I would invite a one-word shift in what you just shared.
Sure.
A one-word shift, and that is, there's nothing selfish in what you're doing at all when you're going in and you're getting deeper. It is self-wise. It is not selfish.
I'll accept that. That sounds nice. Do we have time, Rex, to tell them about Mr. Kane?
Remind me.
The guy in the second group.
We've got about 3 minutes.
Okay, 3 minutes.
We've got about 3 minutes.
Well, maybe there isn't. But you're right about, Michael, about the guys taking this home to their wives. We passed out the my commitment and my commitment to myself and explained that on Tuesday. And one of the guys came up after and he asked Rex for another copy because he wanted to send it to his wife because he could see how powerful the work is and he felt that she would benefit as well. And he loved her enough to make sure she had a copy.
Mm. Yes.
Well, I hold the space that we're going to attract enough people to participate that we can do a laws of link for the jailers and the administration in the prison, and then to do it with the families in the city of Ionia, because I understand many, many families, because these fathers and husbands and children have, you know, got themselves locked in there for 25-plus years, that there are a lot of families that have moved to the town who, you know, the suffering, the pain, the turmoil, the trauma, the confusion in the spouse, the parents, the children has just got to be huge. And to impact them as the inmates are being impacted, I think, is just going to redouble the energetic shift and take things to a whole other level.
Well, and we're all doing the work and doing so well. And we're a tremendous team that is expressing the love, and it's having an impact. So if you ever doubt, or I ever doubt any of that, it's just let it go, because it truly is. And I do appreciate everyone.
Yay. Very cool. Well, we're going to have to close out the show. We're getting down to the last minute or two. Rex, one other thing I was going to ask if Mitzi was there, but maybe Mitzi could call into the show tomorrow and share with us. We talked about it yesterday on the show, but I would love input and explanation of her video on YouTube on the invitation to love. So if that's possible tomorrow, maybe she could call into the show and join us. We do have a couple of spaces if anybody's here in Costa Rica or wants to fly. It's just a short flight from Fort Lauderdale, about 2.5 hours. We start a 9-day intensive tomorrow night at a really cool center called Casa de Piedra in Escazú, which is one of the suburbs of San Jose. We're in San Jose, Costa Rica, and we appreciate everybody who participates in the show, everybody who does their work, everybody who shares it with another person. Please share it with another person. That's what it's going to take to change the dynamics that are happening on planet Earth. Have a blessed day. Give the universe the best gift you could possibly give, and that is have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessing. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.